Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by Shoppable Business, your number one source for procuring products for your business in the Philippines. Discover authentic branded products online. Shop bulk, save big, and secure authentic products with official sales invoices at Shoppable Business today. And also brought to you by DragonPay. DragonPay is the pioneer in alternative payments in the Philippines. DragonPay is the reigning fintech of the year in last year's Philippine Fintech Festival. Sign up now at www.dragonpay.ph.
I think one of the greatest things I learned also is I should never be the smartest person in the room. And I took that a step further. And when I started hiring people, I was not afraid to hire people that I felt were smarter than me.
Welcome to Hustle Share, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here's your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Hustle Share podcast. We're super, super happy because it's not a coincidence that it's Women's Month that we're having all the best hustlers, but of course, during this time of the year, we always want to get the best of the best that we can find. And I've been wanting to get this person in the podcast for a while because there's one thing that she is famous for that I will never forget. Shout out to Minette Navarrete. She goes like, you know who brought Spotify in the country? I'm like, who? No idea. But I love Spotify because before pre-Spotify days, of course, what's prevalent? Prevalent is Surfshark and all these free stuff that you can't even get. But there's this one name that she always, but there's her Dalaga name back then. And she goes, you need to know Kat Ramrani. There you go. So ever since then, that's been, it's like, I need to know this girl's hustle. And today we will finally get her on the show because we have today the general manager of NEMA, Miss Kat Bautista. Woo-hoo! Welcome to the show, Kat.
Hello, good morning. I've always dreamed of being introduced like that, like I'm walking into a boxing ring.
There you go. It's the Michael Buffer in me. I grew up watching, you know, boxing matches like that or wrestling, and always fun to introduce people like that. Thanks for coming over.
Super exciting. Thank you for having me. I've listened to your podcast for a while. I remember when you did the interview with Martin Koo. I think it was one of your first
yes.
Martin's a good friend, and I listened to it and I was just so inspired by, you know, what you were doing, bringing sort of that conversation to the country in such early days. And I always dreamed, like, hopefully when I'm able to build my own, that, you know, I'd be able to sit down and have this interview with you. So thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Again, your reputation precedes you. So that's just a matter of time. So amazing, amazing work. But again, before we start the show, I need to ask you the $1 million question. Kat, what's your hustle?
My hustle. So I'm Kat. I'm the general manager of NEMA Management. So NEMA is a talent management, influencer management, and production house. So we have two businesses. So the talent management portion is the B2C portion, and that's where we manage talents. Mm-hmm. So these are, the model that we have is that we have our top 10 talents that are with us. We don't have a large model. So it's a focused talent management company, which is quite rare in the industry today. And that means we don't take on more than 15 talents. Mm. This allows us to kind of really focus on what the interests and wants of the Filipino are. Yeah. And then the second part of the business is the B2C. So that's our B2B. So that's our influencer management arm. And that's where we work in partnership with all the biggest talent management companies in the Philippines. We sign them and we book them for campaigns and we work directly with brands. So let's say brand X needs 50 influencers and a sort of creative idea on how to get the campaign forward. That's what we do. So that's how NEMA is structured. And I'm super proud of it. And
that is
NEMA's
amazing.
3 years old.
Wow. That's amazing. I still remember your coming out party where you were in this futuristic setting online in a Zoom. Like, whoa, this is amazing.
My our little debut during COVID. Yeah.
Yes. It's like, Wow, man, it's a time warp. Yeah, that was 3 years already. Oh my goodness. That's amazing. But I totally can relate. And I love this conversation we're going to have because, again, for those who don't know, I am the founder and CEO of Podcast Network Asia. So we deal with talents a lot. And my God, is it hard. Oh my goodness. It is so hard. So we had to cut down. We had to undo a lot of our mistakes. Learned a lot though. And that's the main thing about startups, right? You need to be able to iterate fast and learn and from your mistakes and whatnot. But we will talk about that later because I need you to buckle up real quick because we need to go to the origin story when you weren't even Kat Bautista. You were the great Kat Ramrani who brought Spotify into the country. But before that, we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. There it goes. And we are back from day zero or day one. So Kat, one thing that I needed to find out is the premise, right? What was it like growing up and who were your first inspirations in hustling? Who did you see hustle first that inspired you to hustle as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in the Philippines, contrary to the accent. Some people think that
I learned how to do this. Very nice.
So I grew up here. I was raised by a single mom and my sister. And, you know, there are challenges being raised by a single parent.
Yep.
Cash isn't always available and there are things that fall short. Yep. So I learned from a very early age from my mom on how to save, how to plan forward, how to invest if there was a little bit, how to scrimp. And also, you know, I felt being the panganay, it was my duty to help my mom provide for me and my sister. So at a very early age, I started to do little things, whether it was selling cookies or, what's it called? Or making drawings and selling those. Even at school, I used to purchase these notepads and then I would go up to kids and be like, hey, do you want like half the notepad? And I'd sell half the notepad for the full SRP to be able to...
There you go.
So at a very early age, I learned to hustle and it was really my mom. But I think there was always a keen interest in it. I never really asked for Barbies or dolls. I asked for a cash register as my first gift. Yeah. And I asked for it to be filled with actual cash, not play money. So I think as a kid, I kind of knew that there was something to this. And I remember when I first learned to sign my name, I asked my mom if I could sign it on all her checkbooks because I was so fascinated at how that worked. So
that's foreshadowing right there.
has been something that's being in the business world and understanding it has always been instilled in me at a very young age at a different scale. So I really I'd like to thank my mom for it and really kind of pushing me towards this direction.
I totally can relate. I was raised by a single mom as well, and she is the ultimate racketera,
yes.
Right? She sold whatever she can in her office and whatnot. She will commute. We were coming from a lower middle class or borderline. Upper lower class. Is there even such a thing? Lower middle class is somewhere there, right? And okay. She had to hustle and really just make ends meet. But one thing that she really, I credit her for, because if she didn't do this early, I wouldn't have gotten to where I am now. It's that even if she couldn't afford it, or she probably could barely make ends meet, she made sure that she put me in a great school.
Yes. Yes,
right?
Absolutely. My mom.
Not just a random, I mean, there's nothing wrong with random schools, right? But the school I was in is way above her pay grade. It's not supposed to be where lower middle class people can go to, but she put it because she knew that that was probably my only ticket to success. So she even tells me every time that I cannot give you anything. I'll make you pamana except for your education. Never really took that seriously until, again, hindsight being 2020. But if she did not put me in a school where I can get to see the world in a bigger perspective, or if I'm put in a situation where it's not the normal when I'm back home, then no chance in hell I'm going to be able to do that. And that's what I wanted to understand, because I'm literally looking at your LinkedIn. Sorry, I'm a stalker in LinkedIn, my bad. All right. And you studied in IES. So I'll just digress a little bit. This startup ecosystem is run by a lot of IS dudes, like for example, Franco Verona of Boxmont, Paolo Campos of Kaya Founders, even founders like Diego Lorenzo of Pickup Coffee, Angelo Lee, shout out, of Sarisuki, who was also my investor. So what were you guys doing in IS? Because right now I just see so many IS dudes running amazing stuff. But what was it like? And is that where you were selling your cookies and everything else as well?
So yeah, my mom really, like you, my mom really made sure that education for me and my sister was a priority, and sell what we need to sell, do what we need to do. And it wasn't just formative education, but also even my higher education. Mm. She made sure that my sister and I went to wherever we wanted that could provide us the best opportunities. So yeah, at IS, it was also a bit of a challenge going into such a prestigious school, but not having, you know, a solid family at home, nor the resources that everyone else did. So at times, you know, it was a bit humbling to have to do those things. But every bake sale I could, every opportunity I could, I would be there selling my cookies, selling my brownies. I'm not the best baker, by the way, but I was a really good salesperson. So
as long as you can sell your stuff, you're good.
Always sell out my stuff. So yeah, I think IS is an incredible breeding ground for connections. It teaches you networking very, very early.
Nice.
And the importance of it. And you're surrounded by, you know, a lot of great opportunities, people who are connected to a lot of really great people, but also IS is an incredible way of connecting you to the people that will shape your future, the future leaders and the current leaders, right?
Yeah.
There are a lot of opportunities there. I think the IB and AP programs really help as well, because they allow you very early on to design your future and the autonomy behind it.
Okay.
So being able to pick your curriculum, kind of design what you want to do, work in collaboration with your professors to kind of get what you want, and then encourage and supplement that with a lot of like clubs and support to grow you as an individual. I feel like it's so well-rounded as well. So they shape out these like mini entrepreneurs and like soldiers to be able to take on the next generation. Well, parang ad para sa IS, no? May discount po ako dito para sa future children ko. Oy, IS, ha? Pa-sponsor
we need discount
pa.
Talaga because it's easily grabe. Top one, top two in the most expensive schools.
Yeah. ISM, happy to be your spokesperson.
There you go. No, but again, if you just look at it in hindsight, you can see just the type of graduates that you're and where they are now and what they're doing and the type of impact they're doing to nation building, just like you doing NEMA. Just amazing. Just it's jaw dropping when it's like, what? You're all IS? I don't know a school who's just doing it. And I'm probably just hitting the tip of the iceberg. But if you just look at the whole gamut, like, wow. That's amazing. So you mentioned now that your mom provided you the great education that you want. And I'm looking at it. You went to Santa Clara, right?
I did.
I want to now understand, because also while you were in IS, you were the varsity of the tennis team.
Yes.
One thing about sports, and I always establish a skill stat. So first thing you knew is you knew how to hustle, you knew how to sell. From day one, that's going to be coming as second nature. But the discipline of sports is indelible in what you do. So talk about the impact of sports and how you also brought that on, even in Santa Clara.
Yeah. So at a very early age, I started playing tennis. I started playing tennis at the age of 5, and I fell in love with the sport. I've stuck with it ever since. My mom really instilled the importance, you know, of playing sports. So I played all throughout and competed all throughout my junior high. And then eventually when coming into high school, freshman year, I tried out for the tennis team.
Ooh.
And I made it.
Nice.
So the varsity team freshman year. And we got to compete all over Southeast Asia. And that was really exciting. I got to compete in Singapore and Jakarta and KL as well. Yeah, because the IAS community and network, they have this thing called IASIS, which again, you know, fostering networking opportunities and expansion. Your sport is goes to a different country. Each country, each international school hosts you, and then you compete against each other. So that's called IASIS. And so, yeah, I was able to participate in that. And then in my junior year, I was able to make captain for junior and senior year. So yeah, I super fell in love with it and actually helped me with getting into my college to Santa Clara, because it was something that I wrote about. And I was able to get a partial scholarship, and actually even all my college applications, because I put, you know, my tennis accomplishments on there and filmed some really crappy videos of me playing. Wasn't great footage at the time. I was pretending.
That's your mixtape. There you go.
My Steffi Graf moment, right? Steffi Graf. ang bago ng reference, no?
Google it for you Gen Zs. There you go.
So I was sending that out, and I was actually able for some schools to score a tennis scholarship, but ultimately ended up choosing Santa Clara because of the business curriculum and the communication tech curriculum, as well as the location, which is where I knew I wanted to be in California. So tennis has really fostered so much discipline in me. It's a beautiful sport. Still play it today. Admittedly, I play a little more golf today than I do tennis, but it's, I agree. If any, you know, anyone out there is listening, any parents or young people that are starting, play sports and try as much, even if it's an individual sport, try and get involved with the team, because it really teaches you about teamwork and catching each other.
Absolutely. And again, in the end, if you just, again, hindsight being 2020, you realize that, especially if you're going to be in business, it's a team sport. You will never be able to succeed alone, right? We all have roles to play, but it is a team sport. So that's very, very impressive. Now, again, you're in Santa Clara, but now you also doubled down after Santa Clara. You now went there. First thing I'm seeing in LinkedIn is Google. But before this, while you were in Santa Clara, were you doing side hustles at the same time, or what were you doing? Gosh.
I did every hustle possible. College is expensive, right?
Yes.
And as mentioned, my mom was helping me out with this. I had a partial academic scholarship at the time, but American college is super expensive. So I did everything. I had every hustle in Santa Clara. So I first started out with, I realized people would always copy my notes. So I realized I could monetize my notes.
What?
So charge $1 per page of my notes per person. And I would Xerox, wala pong mga picture up. So Xerox my notes, and then I would charge per page. And then that eventually led into tutoring. So I started tutoring, and I tutored in calculus, English, Spanish.
Calculus.
You know what? That's my favorite subject of all math. Like geometry, algebra, trig. Not so much a fan, but I fell in love with calculus. I don't know why.
I literally copied my way through math. If Pythagoras is alive right now, he'd murder me. I didn't learn shit. My brain stopped functioning at fractions. That's when it became too complex. Anything after that, I'm like, what the hell? I'll use my social skills to XD this out. Same thing. My bros, my teammates in basketball. So I also was varsity in high school. Like, you guys suck at English. All right, I'm gonna help you out, but hook me up with math, okay? Because I'm gonna die. There you go. That was the XD.
It's okay. Ganun ako sa art. Pag sa art class, like when they would be like, okay, paint what you feel. Numbers? I feel numbers.
Fraction?
I can do a math problem for you. So, I mean, that's, I think, the beautiful part, right, about connecting and meeting with people is that people have so many different interests. And if everybody was just good at the same sort of thing, the world would be so boring.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, learning styles today, especially in schools today, they talk a lot about learning styles and celebrating different kinds of learners and different kinds of strengths. And I think it's great to see that the academic system is evolving that way. And I hope it reaches sort of every country and every child so that they can be celebrated and not told that they're not great at one thing and okay at another. Because you never know, your formative years help define you, but they don't really actually create your future. That's up to you, right?
Oh, but these are building blocks that you have to go through. And the earlier you master these skills, like selling, networking, you're being able to be seeing opportunities out of, you know, dire situations, that just becomes second nature and it comes in. Because it doesn't get easier. It gets harder and harder, but you also expand your comfort zone as well in getting this done. But before we take our first break, I just want to go through this. So after you did all these side hustles, catch first job lang naman. Okay, in LinkedIn, is Google. She's a Googler. So what was that like? The chances to even get in Google are very slim, right?
Yeah,
How did you get that?
It was super random. So one of my last hustles at Santa Clara was I took a job at Stanford Law. I was in the admin
beautiful
office.
Beautiful campus.
Yes, I was a filing clerk for the law school. I initially wanted to become a lawyer. I thought I was going to be a lawyer because, you know, again, very, very foundational to me is growing up with a single mom. I saw what happened to my mom when she became a single parent and how unfair that was for women in the Philippines. And I really wanted to get into that. So I thought, you know, by working at Stanford Law, it would help me get in. And the dean at the time, my boss, Miss Piada Nonzi, shout out to her. She's amazing. She pulled me aside and she's like, Kat, you know, you have all of the hard skills. You have a good LSAT score. You have this, that, but you are an emotional person. You are not going to be a great lawyer. This is my advice to you. So I still applied. And even though Piotr and I were close, I was rejected from Stanford Law. So I had no idea what to do. Yeah, I had no idea what to do. So I ended up my last year, I left Stanford Law and I started working in the ComTech department of Santa Clara.
Okay.
And so I was working under Father Sukup, my favorite teacher at the time, and he was teaching a class on ComTech. So I became his TA. And I was kind of freaking out because I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm graduating soon. I have no job. My law plans are down the drain. Mm-hmm. So I started to reach out to big companies and invite them to be speakers
for
the class, because I knew if I got them in front of myself and my fellow, you know, classmates, it would give us a better opportunity. Because at the time, right, you know, resumes weren't as robust as they are now. And I know that I'm better speaking rather than on paper. And I felt that if I could just get or isolate an interview for myself, that I would be given a chance.
That's the best shot that you can give out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it worked.
Love it.
But the start, it worked. I was offered a job at Google.
Wow.
That's how I got in. I think I punched above my own weight as well, because when I got in, it was like a whole different world, but also the same world, because as the advantage, my location, right? My school was in Silicon Valley. A lot of the kids from Santa Clara and Stanford that I'd gone to school with were all in the area, even Loyola, Berkeley, all the kids were there. So I think my background as well helped the school I went to. But yeah, that's how I got into Google.
That is amazing. And you know, the one thing that I always, again, I can relate with you so much. I came from the lowest middle class. I look very low middle class now. That's why I speak like this too. Because if I talk the way I normally talk, I swear, my God, you won't even want to hear it. I'm as canto could be, right? But I learned how to speak this way, but I learned it through a call center. That's my first job. First year college in the Philippines. I was a full-time call center agent, full-time student. I never stopped. But one thing that I totally agree with you is punching above your weight class. Because if you just dominate, say, it's just being in sports. If you stay within your peers and you're killing everybody, yeah, you're going to feel good about yourself. But in reality, there's always a weight class higher. Yeah. You want to be able to level up to the point where, oh my God, I don't belong here. Kind of that, you know, that feeling, why am I even here? But I need to belong here and be able to earn my stripes and say that, yo, I'm here. Same with the startup ecosystem. My God, for the longest time, the first, even through my very first startup, which I did for 6 years, I never felt like I belonged. Just what will you do when you're in front of the startup founder X or Y? Like, why the hell am I here? I pinch myself. But you need to give yourself a chance, right?
Absolutely.
You don't punch up, you're going to be stuck.
Yeah, you have no direction on where to go. So I knew I wasn't there, but I knew I could get there. Mm. And confidence in yourself is super important, right?
Yes.
You have to believe in yourself, because if you don't, nobody else is going to, right? And if you believe you can be that, then create that vision, drive towards it every single day, right? It's kind of like going to the gym, right? You know that you can be this type of person. You have to work your mind the same way.
Right.
And it means hustling after hours, reading after hours, doing double the work, being better than everybody else. And so I knew that. And I think I did that, right, with Google. And so I get hired. And my first job, actually, you know, quite similar, because my next job after that was actually quite similar to being in a call center. But my first job at Google, I was hired to come on to fix this website called Orkut, O-R-K-U.
Orkut, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe it was eventually repurposed into Google Hangouts, I think. I think so. So Orkut was an engineer that worked at Google. He was hired out of college, and he had built this sort of Facebook website called Orkut for him to connect with his friends out of Brazil.
Right.
And so it was just meant for him and his like college friends, right? It was Facebook before Facebook. And then it blew up, specifically in Brazil and India. Mm-hmm. And the site was designed for maybe a couple thousand people. And it had, by the time I got on, like 3 million. And at the time, that was huge. So there were so many problems with the website. There were, you know, the scammers, there was bullying, there was harassment, there was pornography.
Wild, wild west.
Yeah, it was, there were no rules. So it was kind of, how do we put principles in place? How do we develop how do we develop a digital sort of doctrine and economy be able to, you know, govern and take care of everybody and make sure that these things don't happen? So yeah, that's what my first job was. That's what I was brought in to do. And it was
you were the warden, because the inmates were running the asylum technically with that content.
Yeah, we were a team of 11 that were working on it with our boss, and then eventually we had a partner product team. Mm-hmm. Together we developed this tool called it Oats, after Hall and Oats, because we used Hall and Oats all the time when the product team was developing it. And the tool allowed us to kind of built, like, scan the website for the specific criteria that we defined. So I learned a lot from Google about product development and being able to kind of work with the most amazing engineers to build out this tool, to kind of build the sort of like detective tool to be able to find these things. And then from that, the next step was then, how do we create this order? How do we create these rules? Mm. How do we build forward? How do we grow?
That is amazing. Now let's take our first break. And when we come back, we will now talk about how you went from Google to Facebook to Apple, and of course, hustling back home in Globe before you launch Nima. But let's talk about that more after the break.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back in the break. We are still with Kat Bautista. At this point, use Katram. There you go. So I just want to do a shout out. All right, I'll just digress a little bit. My product lead in Podcast Network Asia used to be your colleague.
Alien.
And she told me about, no, it's not. She told me about, Katram taught me this, blah, blah, blah. I used to go to parties together. Her name is Jezel Castillo.
Oh my gosh! Jezel! Oh my gosh.
And she said, I told her, hey, I'm having Katram tomorrow. So I go Katram because that's what she calls you.
Yeah.
And every time I go to conferences in the States, she's my buddy. We hustle together in the podcast conferences because she's the only one who also has a multi-entry USB. So Matic, it's me and her. But man,
Castillo, I miss you. It's good to hear you. And I'm so glad she's on your team. Jazz is incredible.
Yeah, she is a foundational piece in my team. And there, she said she learned a lot from you and hustling with you. So thank you for pre-training her. She's now using all of that with me. But again, these are just foundational pieces. And we're talking about your foundational pieces. So after Google, you doubled down in another company. So you went from Google to now Facebook. You spent a couple of years in Google. Now you also did Facebook. And what was the Facebook hustle like?
Yeah, so I can remember this really, really well. So when I was working at Google, it was, you know, what I was describing at Orca, it was very similar to what was bubbling with, at the time, the Facebook. You had to have a .edu address to be able to join. And since I had graduated already, it was still linked to my Santa Clara email address. So I was one of the early adopters. And then I had my Google email address as a secondary to which I had to switch out. So it was very small and very niche at the time. But I loved what Facebook was doing. It was everything that when I looked at it, it was like, this is what I want to do for Orkut. But I need to learn how to do it from someone who knows better than me, right?
Got it.
And so that's when I realized, like, wow, I think I want to be there. So I had a friend that was talking about their recruiter who was looking for opportunities there. So I sent my CV in, and I ended up, I think I had 9 interviews.
What?
Interviews, yeah. I even remember my final interview. He eventually became my boss. His name was Tom Lenoble. Okay. He interviewed me, and he looked at me and he said, I wasn't sure about you on paper, but now that I met you, I get it.
Boom. And
so that's what always like stuck in my head, that, okay, I always have to get in front of people. Tom taught me that. And so I ended up getting hired at Facebook. I was employee, I believe 106.
What? 100 packs only at that point. Yeah. What was the culture like?
It was incredible. So, I have to share this anecdote. And I know my mom's a recurring theme, but I love her. She's incredible. And I have to give honor to her. But
make
I also
your mama MIMP. That's what we're going to call this one for both of us.
But I have to make her lug a little bit here because is so funny. So I was like, Mom, you know, I got a new job. I'm moving to this place called the Facebook. The Facebook? Katrina, ay, sasabi ko sa mga amiga ko, nasa Google ka na, pupunta ka saan? Sa the Facebook? And so, I always rag on her about that, even up to now, like, hey, Mom. So, eventually, I moved to the Facebook, and my mom today is probably still the biggest Facebook user in all of the Philippines.
Oh, tita, she did well naman in the Facebook. Okay.
Okay na ba po? May approval po. So, So yeah, I ended up moving and I ended up working on a team that was doing quite a more specific sort of approach to what I was doing at Orkut because they were much better organized. Mm-hmm. So the culture at the time at the Facebook was incredible. It was very collaborative. We worked, we weren't in Menlo Park yet. We were on Atherton at the end of University Drive. Wow. So it was two rented buildings. The walls were covered in graffiti at the time, but it was just like a entire, just a room, and it was all desks and it was like an open sharing.
Yeah, yeah.
So coming from Google where we had free food, free snacks, yep, free this,
a
free
nice laundry, campus.
Right? Mm-hmm. I was in a room, right? But there are so many incredible minds that were working that every day I was just so amazed with what they were building. I remember though, one of the coolest things about it is because since we were a startup and we were in the middle of Atherton and downtown Atherton on University Avenue, there's no parking. Yeah. So the coolest thing about Facebook was you could park anywhere. And if you got a parking ticket, Facebook would subsidize it.
What?
And so I was like, wow, this is really cool. And my mom was like, bah, I get free haircut and laundry. I'm like, but I get free tickets. That was really, really cool. They encouraged really working together and learning together. So there were a lot of things that I thought they put in place that were really clever. So if you had Facebook roommates or you lived within 1 mile of the office, your rent was subsidized. If you went out to dinner with Facebook people, it was a free dinner. You could charge it back to the company. So very early on, I was looking at those strategic moves and I was like, so this is how you build company culture. Like, this is where your OPEX is going. This is what you're investing in, is really the retention of people and the collaboration of minds, because it was all about ideas at that moment.
Yeah.
And putting that up front. And then I do remember when I met Mark Zuckerberg, I was Yeah, because we were so small at the time. It was our Christmas party. It was in Mountain View. I don't remember the venue. It was a hall. And he was just there hanging out.
Wow, this is pre MMA Zuck with a little fro on.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He was very nice. I mean, that was the only time I had a direct conversation with him. I'd see him in the office and stuff, but you know, I was just a number at the time. I really didn't feel like I could approach him, but I did say hello to him at the Christmas party and stood next to him. We chatted about pizza for a bit, but that was in very early days.
What was this aura like? Because again, not everybody gets it. This is like seeing a deity. These are in terms of founders, like he's probably in the Mount Rushmore of top founders in tech, right?
Yeah,
what was his aura like? What was this? How does he work? What was it like?
Well, at the when I did have that conversation with him, he was very approachable. He was humble. He was nice, a bit reserved.
Not a robot, just like what we saw in the Senate. Okay, no.
I can attest. Mark was eating pizza. He was robots don't eat pizza. He was a lovely, lovely person when we chatted at the party. A bit short, but he was very short conversation. He's not short.
Not in stature.
In stature. It was a short conversation, and then walked off in the office. He was always very collaborative. I'd always see him in meetings with people. He seemed very approachable. But again, this was a different time. People change over time, and I can't speak to him today. But at the time, he seemed like a really invested founder and was very accessible to everybody. And he was in his, you know, hoodie and jeans. And every single day. And that part is really true. Same out. It was similar outfits at the time every day. I think it's evolved into a bit more classic sort of look with the black shirt, right?
Right.
Every day, but it was a hoodie.
That is amazing. All right. So after Facebook, again, a couple of years, this is your last hustle before we went back home. Or at least, yeah, I think it is. Program manager in Apple. Was Steve Jobs still alive at this time? What was the... Man, this is amazing. What a resume. I'm not even at the Globe part yet, but like not even Nima yet. But what was that like working in Apple, and what did you learn and hustle with there?
Yeah, so Apple at the time was a very established company already. And I enjoyed my time at Facebook very much. And also I was also looking for a bit more mentorship at the time. And Facebook was very young. I mean, the average age at the time, I think, was 25. Wow. It felt like we were all still in college because it was a lot of people that I'd known from the community. So I was really looking for a bit more guidance and kind of wanted to move forward with that. So when I was looking, I saw Apple was hiring in the program management department. And one of the skills that they were looking for was organization and structure. And that's always been something that I'm quite good at. So I wanted to kind of explore it, and it's been a dream. So I was like, hey, shoot my shot. Why not try? Mm-hmm. So I applied and I got in. So I started working. I was initially hired as a consultant. and then through a consultancy firm, and then eventually moved into the Apple ecosystem.
Like, what was the day-to-day grind like, and what were you doing as a program manager?
Yeah, so I got to work on a lot of programs at Apple. So initially, it would be like certain things, like if there were launches, I would be pulled in to help with certain things. If there was a device sort of issue, I'd be pulled in to work on the device issue. But that's actually how I got exposed to telecoms, because it was when we were releasing the first iPhone that I was part of the Apple family at the time. And I got to specifically work with the group that managed the antennas on the first generation iPhone. And part of that testing was being very connected. My NDA is probably still in effect.
So I won't say it. Just use pseudonyms. There you go. Yeah,
we had to spend a lot of time with the telecom company that they were going to be launching with. And that meant testing the signal. And when I saw actually what telecoms did and the power telecoms had, and how the telecom negotiated the deal with Apple, I was blown away, right? I mean, I was, you know, just a fly on the wall. I had no part in any of that at all. I was just on the organizational aspect and making sure things flowed. Mm-hmm. But watching, you know, my bosses and their bosses, you know, close this deal and just seeing that telecom at that time and how powerful they were, mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this is maybe an industry I'd eventually want to get into. And then see, you know, the product that Apple built, but how that telecom was able to bring it to the next level was just incredibly fascinating to me. And I'd never thought of that industry before because it wasn't at the time sexy. Yep. It wasn't really something that you spoke about. It was, you signed up, you got a plan, and you kind of like didn't think anything of it. But that combination between Apple and telecom and being able to have a bet maybe in the nosebleed seats, but a seat to be able to watch the transaction take place between the best minds in the industry was just such a learning experience for me. And that's what kind of ignited my interest.
All right. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. The exciting part, because at this point, according to your LinkedIn, this is where you went home. Now, before we talk about how you got back home, going to the States a couple of years, times a year, talking to a lot of Filipinos, Filipino Americans and whatnot, this is what breaks my heart sometimes. A lot of people are amazing minds coming from the Philippines. They go to the States and their mindset is like, I ain't never coming back. Like, and that's just like, man, if you just had this type of dude back home, the amount of stuff that you're going to be able to do to help the country out would be amazing. Multiply that by how many people are like that. They're just like, I'm done. I'm Filipino still. This is my home now. I am coming back. So it's called brain drain.
Brain drain.
Right? Now, why did you decide to come back? When you had a resume of Google, Facebook, Apple, what pulled you to come back and how did that lead to Globe?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, the central theme, my mom, she had three strokes, a major stroke.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
So I hopped on a plane to... I don't know why I want to sing the Miley song. I hopped on a plane to LA. So I hopped on a plane, went home and took a month off to take care of my mom. And I realized, you know, as I went back to the US for work, that mom was deteriorating emotionally. So it was hindering her recovery. So, you know, my sister and I at the time, my sister was just graduating from Santa Clara, right?
Oh, you're both in the States.
Yeah, we were both in the U.S.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. So it was a conversation that, you know, hey, we really got to take care of mom because things are not going well. So my mom, we had the conversation. And given that my sister was just starting her career, I said, you know, I'll be the one to move back and take care of mom. Right. Yeah. And there are a couple of other things as well that really kind of drove me to move back. Well, I loved my time in the U.S. I loved meeting people and growing with ideas. Iba pa din yung mahal ng Pinoy.
There you go.
Iba pa din yung from a social, emotional aspect. I mean, you know, this land raised me. So it's my turn to come back as well. So it was a very peaceful decision I made. My mom is my priority and I was happy to come home. I was apprehensive eventually, essentially because, you know, I went to school in IS, right? I shipped off to the US. I didn't have the experience as well. And Jazz actually was one of the first people to welcome me back
there
into
you go.
The Philippines. So with Globe, what had happened was I had sent out my CV to a bunch of companies and I had interviewed, but I really liked my interview with Globe. Ooh. I liked what they were doing. I thought it was really clever, and we're really able to connect it with my experience with Apple and what I had been doing with Apple. And they wanted to do things similarly at Globe.
Got it.
So yeah, I accepted the offer to work in the mobile data services department.
There you go. And what do you guys do there? For those people who are like, what the hell is a mobile data services?
So my job was to teach people how to use internet on their cell phone.
Turn the mobile data, remove the Wi-Fi. There
but
you go.
Know that was so hard at the time because people were so scared of bill shock. So it was more of like my challenge was an emotional shift. How do you get people to trust and love a telecom? Because going back to it, it was just very like, I use it to sign up for call and text. But people didn't love. So we had to build customer love and trust because you cannot tell someone. They have to want to experience it. So it was a big shift. We did everything from, and it was a learning and humbling process for me, from education to engagement, et cetera, till Ernest, our CEO, had the brilliant idea. And Peter Bithos, Ernest and Peter.
Yeah,
had
those two, idea. Super combo.
Best mentors in the world. Peter Bithos, I credit him for so much of my growth. It was just working under him and then eventually, you know, being able to get guidance from Ernest. Just two most amazing mentors a woman could have. Always empowering. So Ernest and Peter had the brilliant idea of saying, well, why tell people about it rather than when you can make them try it? And so I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, try the internet for free. I'm like, boss, paano na yan?
Libre, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we built free Facebook, Globe's free Facebook.
Ah, it's you pala. So tita, see? It goes full circle now.
But that wasn't just me. I know you do. You know Ian Sikora, right?
Ian Sikora. So rings a bell, can't quite remember. There's a lot of you guys in TGT at this point, because at 2013, 2014, this is also the time where I got invested on like Kickstart for my very first startup.
Yes.
Party File.
Yes, Party File. Yes.
Yeah, it's like, oh, get people in the club. So again, this is the type of stuff that they believed in. And this was like the peak of raving in the country. So like, I was getting people into all of these. But wow, so free Facebook and you had a team. How did that even lead to the tipping point where people actually trusted it already?
So it was the experience. So the team was led. So Ian Sikora was the project lead on this. Ian, super incredible, led the project. I supported in terms of the marketing and product build. And the and it was really cool to be able to work with my old coworkers again. So to have them fly like into Manila and be like, hey, full circle. So that was
What's
really
that?
Fun. Yeah. But the idea was to build a walled garden ecosystem where people could come in and use Facebook with all the data carried by Globe, all the charges. And then each step of the process, for example, you're going to watch a video out, had an interstitial that informed you, hey, we're going to watch a video. This will cost you money. But we took it even a step further. And when you were going to do that, we let you borrow against Globe to be able to watch the video. So it would either be deducted from if you were
posting. Top up.
Yeah, or prepaid your top up. So it was a trust behavior. It wasn't, hey, we're going to charge you right away. Let's change that mindset and we'll give it to you right away. Even if it's at a loss, we want you to try it. And that worked incredibly.
That's still on till now, because when I turn on my data, and I'm a Globe Platinum, so shout out Globe Platinum for the free lounge access. There you go, lounge access all the time. I love it. In Naiya Terminal 1, that's the best thing you can have, because T1 is, yeah, there you go. That's all I'm going to say. So I get to eat shomai and arascaldo before I leave every time. But the type of trust that you also built, that behavior, now, okay, I'm aware that this will cost me data. It's just paramount. And I love that you did that. So that turned into the tipping point, right? Mm-hmm. So that's amazing. But, you know, the hardest thing, especially for startup founders, is when you're creating a company or creating a startup that requires customer behavior change, right? You're changing status quo, especially if people are like used to doing things a certain way. And you're going to be here not just to present a new product, but a whole new thing. People don't usually cross that chasm. But what were the, aside from that, were there other foundational pieces that you had to do that allowed people to really eventually jump ship and then start trusting the telco and doing that?
Yeah, it was complemented by a marketing campaign that made it simple, easy to understand. The rebranding of Globe changed at that time from very telco to kind of more lifestyle and sort of understanding customer behavior. It was an entire shift in the company. And that was, you know, to credit Ernest and Peter's leadership through every department. They espoused in us sort of the vision. And because we had such great leaders, you know, everybody believed in it. So the product part was one component, but everybody needed to believe that the problem wasn't the consumer, but the problem was the messaging and how we were approaching it. And when we made that fundamental shift in the company, that's when the customers started coming in and it grew Globe's customer base. I believe at the time it was 30 million. After free Facebook, it went to like 60, 90, 100, et cetera. Yeah.
What?
That is intense. And I remember during this time, because I was working with Globe a lot for the events, Joe Calero was even telling me that, hey, watch out. These stores, there's a
supplement,
I think that, yeah, there you go. It's going to transform. It's not going to look like a telco shop. It looks like a colorful, putting apps and all that. So now it makes sense in hindsight.
Even down to the stores, yeah. And Joe was a fundamental driver in that. You know, he made the stores places to be. He brought in theater. You know, the whole company really transformed, and really credit to our amazing leaders. And I always say this, there's no training like Globe Telecom training. It's incredible training.
Right. It's amazing. Now, Arant, again, the reputation was built on this thing. When you're head of music and video, whatever you can talk about without breaking any NDAs, this thing that I found, I was like, Katra Marani, Spotify. She brought Spotify here. Walk me through that. Because again, I credit you. I'm now able to access non-pirated music because of what you've done. So how did that happen, and how did it turn into you become head of music and video?
Yeah, so this changed my career. This decision changed my career. It was Peter Bithos.
Shout out.
The decision. Mm-hmm. Peter was actually even at my wedding. I will never forget how Peter changed my life. But Peter Bithos, with my bosses at the time, Jill Go. Mm-hmm.
Mother Jill, okay.
Yeah, Mother Jill.
Mother Jill. Mm-hmm.
Love you, Mother. So they decided that they wanted to build out the content business. Mm. So Facebook was initially a project, but they decided that we wanted to expand into different products, right? Mm. So they said, you know, why not build out into different verticals? So the next vertical that we identified that was a passion point for the consumer was music. Pinoys love music. Right. And so we did a focus group discussion, and I was part of those focus groups. And there was this one focus group where there was this carpenter. He was 59 years old, and we were asking him about his cell phone behavior. Yeah. And he talked about how he had one cell phone, but the cell phone wasn't within his reach. It was with his wife. So I asked, wait, how does that work? How do you call your wife if you guys only have one cell phone? So he explained that they couldn't afford it, but his wife worked as a helper in someone's house, and they would only see each other on Sundays. So every Sunday, they would go to a black market area and pay 99 pesos to download songs, and he would get 1,000 songs with 99 pesos.
It's not as many. Yeah, I mean, not just it's pirated, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I hope there's a bunch of Christian Bautista songs there, the way you look at me and all this. There you go. There's something in the way.
Sorry, na Christian. Sorry.
Sorry. Well, so, grew up with that stuff, okay? Grew up with that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I have no doubts. If it's the greatest love songs, I am definitely biased and would say that the way you look at me better have been on there. You know, at the time, I didn't know what God had planned for me in terms of my love life. But yeah, so it was 99 pesos, and he would download 1,000 songs, and it would be love songs, right? And so they would try and change it out, you know, as much as possible. But it would be like every month or every few weeks, whatever he could afford. And so that's when I realized this is how people speak to people. When you can't say anything, you say it with song. How can I change that behavior? Right? Like, but when you don't know what you're feeling anymore, right? And parang or galit ka, magpo-post ka na lang ng song, right? Online.
Please be careful with my heart. Something like that. Okay.
Or there's color everywhere.
Exactly. I love the puns.
Anyways, so when we built that customer behavior, we took it to our bosses, and they said, okay, which partner do you want? And they were very supportive when we chose the partner of Spotify, and Ernest and Peter flew over to Stockholm and got Spotify signed over to Globe. And then they were like, here, build it.
They flew over for you to build. That's amazing. I'm completely blown away. But you know, there's one thing, I'll digress a little bit. Din Siamat of 917 Ventures always references this point, that if you guys were able to do that for Spotify, I think that was a precursor to how 917 was even made.
Yeah.
If we can do this for Spotify, we can do it for our own products, and we can do it for Filipino products as well.
Absolutely.
Right. So what was the foundational things of how that was able to, of course you got the account, but I mean, it ain't going to sell itself. It's not going to be able to do that. How did you then scale that and then made it what it is now?
Yeah. So going back to that consumer behavior, I knew one of the things we had to do was offer Spotify at the lowest price in the world. Mm-hmm. And so if you notice, the entry point of Spotify was 99 pesos. That was an ode to that carpenter that told us that he would spend 99.
Oh, wow.
So that was the price point that, you know, my bosses, Ernest and Peter, when they were doing their negotiations, really fought for, because myself and, you know, Mother Jill and the entire marketing team were like, we stand by the research that we found and this is what we want. So we made Spotify the lowest priced entry point in the Philippines overall, and we complemented it with an incredible marketing campaign. For the first time, we used real music and not canned music in our ad.
Nice.
And it was Paramore TVC with the song Ain't It Fun, and we launched
Ain't It Fun. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was complemented by campaigns everywhere. So not only was the product incredible, it was educational campaigns, awareness campaigns. I was putting events on ground. I was going regional as well. And I was always listening to what people were having to say, people that loved the product or hated the product. What did they like about it? What didn't they like about it? Can we introduce family bundles, student bundles? How do we lower the price? How can we try different price points? And I was constantly iterating to the point that it became super successful, that we eventually expanded Spotify to do regional activations. And then it started to grow and grow and grow. And I believe from its entry point, and this was always my goal, Spotify became the number one music app in the Philippines, and never let go of it since its second week of launching in the Philippines.
It's you who made them 90% share in the podcast space. That's why it's so hard to, they own the podcast space, even not just music, because any ears of Filipinos in terms of music and now also podcasts, Spotify, and it's you that was able to build that for them.
Thank you for the kind words. But I think it was, you know, really a cumulative effort. Nobody really does anything on their own. And I think it's, you know, I love the product so much. I was such a user of Spotify even before I came to the Philippines. But I have to give credit to my amazing bosses, my teammates, you know, the product teams that nobody saw that were with me building this product to be able to allow you to charge it through your Globe bill and all of the things that went in, price point, iteration. But, you know, it was also, I had incredible partners at Spotify, some of which were still my close friends today. We still talk. So it was really a magic team.
Okay, sounds good. Now let's take our last break. And when we come back, we'll talk about your last stint with being head of strategy and program management in the content business of Globe. Of course, before that led to Nima. We'll talk about that more after the break.
Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup, because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes, all the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.ph payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey, hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey, hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, DragonPay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, DragonPay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disperse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. DragonPay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit DragonPay is. DragonPay was named Fintech of the Year at last year's Philippine Fintech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust DragonPay.
And we're back in the break. We are still with Cap Bautista, then told us the amazing job. Thank you for being able to do that. I can now listen to the best of Christian Bautista in Spotify. There you go. Okay, binging, stuck in traffic in EDSA. Of course, you want to swoon over that playlist all the time as well.
Pasave right. Na lang po yung mga songs niya. Salamat.
There you go. There you go. It's auto-follow na, Matik. There you go. Mm-hmm. So I want to now understand the other things that you've done. So just quickly, after being head of music and video, how did that lead to now head of strategy in the whole content business? Because that's a whole new dragon that you're going to have to lead.
Yeah, so Nico Acosta, one of my mentors today, came in to head the content
business. AdSpark, right? They're,
mm-hmm. Yeah, Brave Connective. AdSpark is one of the companies under Brave.
Brave, okay, there you go. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, boss Nico came in and he was like, hey, I need some structure in the company. Do you want to be a strategy person or my strategy person? I said, I know nothing. And he goes,
no. I'm Jon Snow at the moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's such a good reference, sorry. So he said, do you want to be my strat head? And I said, I have no idea. He's like, I will teach you, my young Padawan. So he did. In all these strategy classes, I went through a crash course in Ateneo for it, read a lot, learned about Porter's Five Forces, and eventually started to grow into the role. My goal as the strategy head was to be able to predict the content landscape before it actually developed. So, okay, Spotify, we had Netflix, we had Disney, we had all these partners, but what was next? What was the next big app? How did we grow the business? What did the consumer want? What was the behavior? How do we acquire? How do we merge? Is this a joint venture? So that became my role, to which I really enjoyed very much. I didn't think I would. And I didn't realize, you know, it was really setting me up to run my own business, right? Being in the operations of like Facebook and Spotify and like working through that to strategy and allowing myself to see the big picture and make these decisions and look forwards. One of the biggest things we did at Strategy was defining subcultures and the importance of subcultures and understanding their behaviors and how do you cater to them. Mm. So that was something that I was really excited with at Globe and introducing that to Globe. And that was my final project before I left to move over to NEMA.
There you go. But before we talk about NEMA real quick, I want to understand at this point, you've had an amazing run now. How are you like as a leader? Because every single step we go through, right? We make a lot of mistakes. We also discover new things about ourselves and we get to do things over with other opportunities. But at this level, I mean, foundationally, you're already a hustler. You're already an ate. You know how to step up. But at this point of your career, before you even started doing NEMA, what was your leadership style and how did you get people to like come together? Because of course, let's just call it what it is. Globe is a very big company and you're going to have to go through a lot of layers to get things moving. It's not like in a startup where, okay, let's get things done. A sprint after we got the baby out. Here's totally different. Navigating through that and still getting people to buy in. Totally different hustle.
I think that, you know, networking and sort of my, I guess, innate sort of knack to be able to sell really helped me. Mm-hmm. So in terms of work, I always approach every situation, would leave every situation better than when you left it, even if it's an argument or a fight. So my relationships with the people at Globe were very strong. I mean, as strong as, you know, my Christmas list, which is like, right? I mean, I don't forget your birthday. I don't forget Christmas. So discard is a big part of being able to get things done outside of process. And that's something that you need to take note of, right? A process is there, but there's also a way to get things done if you need things done urgently. And you have to know that. And that's equally as important as being able to follow process and procedure. But I'm not one for rules, really. I like to break them. And I like to push forward.
I love it.
So I think that that's how I get things done. But as a leader, you know, Globe invested a lot in me and involved me in a lot of classes. I went through trainings. Mm. I went to trainings in Australia. I went to trainings in Singapore. I was in immersion trips in Korea and China to be able to learn a lot of these things. And I was best to be led by some of the best, right? I did also do a lot of reading and I realized something that hurt leaders hurt other leaders. And I never wanted to do hurt leaders hurt future leaders. Mm. And I never wanted to be that person.
So cycle.
Yeah. Being cognizant of, you know, being a millennial leader, having to foster the next Gen Z sort of group and understanding that diaspora and that dynamic behind that. I wanted to make sure that I included sort of that safe sort of space, being able to push and pull back when needed, but be able to create a culture where I was accessible, not aspirational, because I feel like if you create yourself and, you know, essentially make yourself a deity where people look up to you, right? You miss out on the true conversations. You miss out on the ability to connect with people. And I think that that's where my strength is, as you know, this has been a running theme here. So I wanted to really kind of build that. And through the mentorships and the things that I was able to study and grow, I think I slowly grew into that. I didn't always have it. I had a lot of rough edges that needed to be polished. There was a chip on my shoulder for a while. I was a bit too American in my way, very straightforward. So over time, definitely Globe training sharpened and molded me to where I am today. But there's still a lot of work to do, right? You learn every day. Not perfect. But yeah. I guess my relationships, the fact that every single one of my kids that has moved on, or like, I call them my kids now, or
we call them Jazzy in PNA. So yeah. Jazzy is one of them. There you go.
I still have good relationships with all of them. So I think that that's like a great sign that, you know, we're still able to connect.
That's what you know, that when you know you've left an indelible mark, when just like you, the way you talk about Peter Bithos and Ernest and Nico, these are the foundational mentors that you've had. You know, you've done a great job as a leader. I mean, you're not perfect. I go through that. There's going to be probably half the room who's going to tell me Ron is an asshole. Like that guy is just wear his heart on his sleeve, too intense. But for those people that fully understood and hopefully through working with me, set them up to what that is, became better, then yeah. I'm all for it. And that speaks a lot for who you are. I have one in my team that's one of your babies, right? And the type of conversations you talked about when she was working with you is just paramount. And I think that's a sign of a good leader, that even after the because I always tell this to my team, that, hey, we owe it to each other to hustle our hardest. Yeah. Because this relationship that we're doing, whatever we're doing now, is just a phase. It's finite. All of us are going to move on. Now, if we're not going to give it our all right now, then we waste the opportunity to be able to bring the best out of each other. Right. So, and when that sticks through and when they carry along what they learn from you to another hustle and it materializes full bloom into wherever they are, it's just a beautiful feeling. And that's a beauty of being a leader as well. Then. Again, I credit you for giving me a Jazzy in my team. There you go.
I'm so happy to hear. I think one of the greatest things I learned also is Boss Nico told me that I should never be the smartest person in the room. And I took that a step further. And when I started hiring people, I was not afraid to hire people that I felt were smarter than me. And I think, you know, being secure enough in yourself to know where your strengths are, but seeing the potential in someone else to be better than you is what makes also a great leader in terms of being able to be secure and grow the next generation. And I think that's, you know, it's incredible the way you talk about Jazz and how you're growing her today, right? I super admire that and also want to commend you on your leadership of her, being able to take her abroad and do all these things that, you know, the future generation deserves that. They deserve leaders that believe in them and not just try to put them there to finish a job or do a job, right? And that's the Alagang Pilipina, right? That's why we came home. That's what makes us.
And I always tell her this, I'm just going to, before we talk about Nima, I sleep better. I get probably a couple hours more sleep because I know she's on my team. Being a leader. There you go. Because if not, I lack really quality sleep a lot of times. But because she's there, okay, I can focus on other stuff that I can chase.
Yeah.
As well. All right. Now let's talk about Nima. How did the idea of Nima even come from? Because, you know, this is another chip on your shoulder moment. Like, all right, fish out of water again. This is punching up the ladder. And you talk about it, that it is your business. How did that come through and how did Nima come to life?
Yeah, so absolutely. So when Chroma Entertainment was built, I was initially the strategy head of Chroma. And we were building out the pillars, you know, movies, TV, podcasts, magazines. And then talent came into question. And they said, you know, we need a talent arm. And it's always been in me. So many, many moons ago, about 25 years ago, I used to be a talent. So I used to be in front of the camera. And I had signed with multiple agencies and I had gone through the gamut. You know, I've gone through all of the bad things you hear about it. And as a younger, you know, as a young, impressionable woman, you wish that someone takes care of you and tells you that it's okay that your hips don't match the weight, the measurement. It's okay that, you know, you don't look like everybody else and you are okay. There will be a market for you. But, you know, at 15, 14 years old, you're told that you're not good enough. You believe it. So when they asked about talent, I said, hey, you know, I don't, and I wasn't embarrassed about it. I said, I don't have experience in it running the business, but I do know how to run the business. I have a desire on how to do it. I have this vision. Can I be moved over to build it? So I left my cushy strategy position to go out into the cold and build a talent management agency. And this is, you know, I think the beginning of like the origin story of like a founder, when you have this crazy, this idea and you cannot let it go and you're telling everybody about it. Yeah. And they're like, it won't work. It won't work. Focused talent management won't work.
Yeah.
But you keep telling them that I believe we can do it. I understand it. And people are saying, no, you need a roster of 300. And
no,
I can. Watch me. Yeah. The more you say the more I'm going to do it. Watch me.
Right.
So that's actually how I picked the name Nima. Because when everybody was telling me no, I didn't want to come in with a name like that, you know, that signified bigness right away. I wanted to earn my stripes and I wanted to remind myself every single day of why I did this and the talents that believed in me and why we did this. And so Nima stands for Now You Must Aspire.
Boom.
Every day. So I picked it as well because my vision is to expand. And NEMA is something that you can say in with any accent, in any language. It's easy to say. It's four letters. So I wanted to make sure that it was future-proof for expansion. And a catchy name as well.
I love it. Now, okay, 0 to 1. This is a 0 to 1 moment, fish out of water. And again, you said that they told you they can't, you can't do it and you have another chip on your shoulder. What was the 0 to 1 moment? How did you start getting the people around you to join you on this battle? Because you can't do it alone.
Yeah,
you cannot be Rambo and go to a war with just a machine gun and hope that you never run out of bullets. You have to be prepared. And second, how did you change the narrative that, okay, we only need a handful or a baker's dozen of talents or a dozen of talents, and that's going to bring us forward? How did you get your first talents on board?
So absolutely. So I'm a big consumer of content online. And so I spent a lot of time with myself. I had a lot of conversations with myself to distill my vision very clearly, because that's the way you're going to get people to join you, is if they believe in the same things. And the majority may not, but if your vision is clear, then a few crazy people are going to jump on board with you. And I needed to find my people. So in order to find my people, I needed to be clear on what I wanted to do, where I was, how, what I wanted to build, what the opportunity was for them, and how we were going to do it together, and what success looked like.
The North Star, technically.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it took a lot of time, right? Because it was trying to distill something that I knew from one side of the business, but not the other side of the business. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of conversations with my friends, with people around me, with my husband, with people in the industry. And people were so generous and kind with their time to be able to take away, you know, tidbits. And there, I built the foundations from it. I started looking around, asking friends, do you know anyone? Are you interested? Is anyone looking? And this name fell on my desk, Karen Tumbali. Ooh. Karen Tumbali is a 20-year veteran in the industry. She, you know, built the YouTube business for ABS-CBN. Oh. She took care of Adobers as well. And this was over the pandemic. So I call her on Zoom. And a 1 hour conversation turned to 5 hours when I presented her the idea. And so it was like, hey, do you want to build this with me? And she goes, absolutely.
Boom.
And here we are 3 years later. She's now, you know, my one of my business partners and one of my good friends. And we built this company over a pandemic, over Zoom.
That is amazing. And she's the one responsible for getting this the interview done. So shout out, Karen. Thank you so much.
Shout out, KT.
I told you it's so hard to get the Cat Bautista. So thank you. Now I am so hard there before. Not that hard I couldn't reach you. I know you're going to be available. I just don't know how to navigate TGT to get to your room up there. I don't know if it's in TGT or W building beside it. I forgot.
TGT. Tama ka dyan. Tama. Informed ka. So how we got our first talent, which is Rocco Ruiz, is I was a big follower of his content. He's an artist, photographer, and he does those Konyo comedic skits online. But I just saw so much potential, because that was the strategy behind NEMA. It's what are the interests of the Filipinos? Music, comedy, film, etc. And how do we hire talent? How do we get talents that fit in those specific genres? And that's it. We hire the best in those genres. And I fell in love with Rocco's comedy. So shooting my shot, sent a message from my personal Instagram. Hey, Rocco, this is me. Can I have a conversation with you? I want to work with you. We got on a call. It was a 3-hour conversation.
Wow.
I said, look, I don't have my company yet, but I have one employee and an idea. And here's my idea. And he was like, I will wait for you, because he had offers. I will wait for you because I believe in your vision. Wow. And Rocco waited. And today he's incredible, closing brand deals all over the place. His art exhibits are selling out in 2 hours. He's been able to move out on his own. So super proud of where we've come today. Shout out Rocco Bell. Check him out online.
There you go. Amazing. But all right, you mentioned that at this point he had to wait because you had to build. What were the things you had to build on the side in order for you to be ready to really take talent on?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had to be able to build my my team, right? We needed talent managers, we needed RMs, we needed finance on board. So I had to build out my team. I had to build out process, because I needed to make sure that was one of the things that I wanted to take off from my talents is, you know, negotiating with your client, right? I needed to make sure all my processes were in place so that when I get in front of clients, no matter how big or small, I'm ready to invoice, I'm ready to pay out. I'm ready to negotiate. I know what my highs and lows are, right? We're incorporated, right? We're licensed to do business, all of those things. So it was just setting up all the fundamental stuff of the day-to-day. And nobody teaches you about that. That's the non-sexy part of business, right? How to build a process, how to make sure all of this is going on. But you need to make sure that those systems work so that you can go out and really kind of scale and grow your business because people need to be able to rely on you for the small stuff, right?
That is amazing. Now, when you got this, I want to understand. So as a talent management company, right? Two things I really want to know. First off, the business model, because I'm wearing my Podcast Network Asia hat. Oh. And the way I created PNA when we started out was I knew from the get-go that it was going to be a law of supply and demand, right?
Yeah.
Now, the main challenge we had when we started out in 2019, I looked around, it's like, all right, who's doing podcasts? Only 20% of the top 200 podcasts in Spotify, again, just of you, were locally made. And those 20%, a vast majority of them sounded amateur. I learned how to podcast like this because I learned from zero to one, founder level stuff. So I got obsessed, perfected my craft and said, hey, how can we do this startup style? Like grassroots, a lot of shotgun approach, but you have to show first what's possible.
Mm.
Because there's no benchmark. The only benchmark I had was the ones in the States. And I said, can we create the world, the biggest podcast network in Southeast Asia coming from the Philippines? Right now. And that's why we raised funds. We were able to go from 5 shows to 230 shows, not just here in the Philippines, but also in Indo. Mm-hmm. Right? Very, very similar market.
Congratulations.
But it was hard. Oh my God.
It's hard.
It was so hard. But that was a metric, and it costs a lot of money to be able to get to build that. But at least now we show you that the podcast little thingamajig that we're doing is now an industry. We built a freaking industry. For you guys, what were those metrics? Because I remember for us, the simple metric is, all right, build the supply, make the podcast go, it's in a way the talent go popular, supplement them, but don't give them shackles for in order for them to do what they're doing. Just be ride shotgun, let them have the driver's seat, right? Yeah. And then if they, hopefully when they get, they grow enough, you're able to monetize them. Or help them monetize because most parents don't know how to monetize themselves properly. Just guide them towards that. And then we do rev share at that point at scale, right? Mm-hmm. What are those metrics you had to drive the team to and also the talents to? Because if they have to be in sync. If talent wants popularity, it's not aligned with what you want to do, it will never work. How did you get that done?
So it was really understanding from the beginning, you know, what our expectations were of the talents and what we were doing differently versus other agencies. What was different with us? And that was our ratio, right?
Okay.
Number of people dedicated to the talent, right? Mm-hmm. Versus being one of many. So I think that immediately was attractive. So given that, I was very upfront that there's cost to that, right? Mm. So here is what I believe are the sort of expectations in terms of where we want to go with you in revenue. I was very upfront. This is my baseline. These are your revenue projections. This is where I want to go together. And this is how I believe we can hit it. And they were very clear in terms of what their KPIs are. So each of our talents, when they come on, we do a strategy and a deep dive session. What are your goals? What's achievable in year one? What's achievable in year two? Because very similar to how I brought my team on board, bringing my talents on board, we needed to align on what we expect. Because baka in year one, you're expecting this. And it's this. If you don't have that very honest discussion, you're going to have a misalignment. Mm-hmm. Your talents are going to leave you.
Right.
So we had, you know, we all had these very honest, you know, talent discussions. And from there was able to deliver from that. In terms of model overall, it's, you know, the rev share model, very standard in the talent management agency. Yep. But we also provide the other services on that in terms of the opportunity for talents to earn. So for example, there's... let's say affiliate marketing, right?
Yes.
How can a talent earn on that individually? So we incentivize our talent.
One is the best at it, freaking Mayora. Budolista of the world.
She is. You know what? Being Mayora's friend is even harder than being her manager. Because you all
Uy, Mare, buy this. Here's the link.
You should see my chat. And then and she'll do it like late at night. God, look what I found. Now I have like 3 air fryers because of her. How many yarns in my thing? I have a disco ball in my living room. But when she tells you about it, you just want to buy it.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
A hustler being hustled by another hustler right there.
Yeah. It's my queen hustler here, Mayora Frances Cabatuando.
Now, but how did you then go from those talents? I mean, Rocco, right? Yeah. And then you also went overseas as well to get that done. How did that work?
Yeah, so we started to acquire talents. Rocco was the first, Francis was the second, Christelle was the third, and then Abby joined us. Abby Marquez, Lumpia Queen, joined us. She was the fourth. Bougie Babiera.
Is she the one cooking the food that's really...
What happens if you wrap blah, blah, blah in lumpia wrapper?
Okay. This is your fault, Abby. I always scream late at night. My goodness.
That's another problem.
I'm supposed to sleep night and then you're throwing me a lumpia. Oh my God. Mm-hmm.
Being Abby Marquez's friend at 10 p.m. is the hardest because I'll get over her draft videos. Miss Kat, pwede pa check? I'll look at it. Sige, bibilin na lang ako ng gulaman. Parang sarap. So, I mean, that's the part
downsides of having great talent like that too.
That's the problem of talent. That's not the problem. That's the part of people talent management that people don't see, right? The 3 a.m., the photosynthesizing, the knowledge dropping, all of that that you're dealing with. But yeah, we decided we also wanted to expand internationally. And so we have great partners at EN Management. So Eddie Nam, who heads EN Management, shout out Eddie, who's the head of EN Management. We got on a call, kind of shared our ideas and talked about bringing great talent to the Philippines, but also working with EN to be able to bring our talents internationally, which was always the goal, right? So EN partnered with us. So we are the official representatives of Eric Nam and Jamie Miller.
I'm studios. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Which is incredible. Like on our second year, I couldn't believe it that they trusted us with, you know, these two incredible talents, and they're wonderful people. Eddie's incredible manager, and I learn a lot from him as well as a friend on day-to-days, and especially how, you know, talent management works in the U.S. And I think as well for me, then the knowledge is symbiotic. He learns about it in the Philippines and Indonesia. Yeah. And we're able to kind of, you know, help each other out and help our talents out. And it's great because Eric and Jamie have a huge market in the Philippines.
Yes, they do. Now, I want to understand now a couple of things, right? Because it's never just a unit. Easy, especially with talents. My God, you don't know what you don't know. Things are just going to burst out of nowhere. Like, what? We're dealing with this right now? What are these things that you have to deal with that's so hard that you never see? It'll come out of left field. Like, there's just like, what is this? Now we have to deal with this.
Everything. I've had to deal with flat tires. I've had to deal with brake. I've had to deal with, I've had to deal with producers not keeping up their end of the bargain. I've had a 3 a.m. call where I've had to come down to set. I've had to deal with storms, flus.
Oh,
I mean, at times, sometimes you sit there and you're, there's this one shoot where I was on top of a helipad and I was on top of the helipad and because it was so windy, the microphone flew off. And so I was down with my team in the bushes at 4:30 in the morning looking for a microphone. And I was just questioning myself that, is this what I signed up for? Is this what entrepreneurship looks like? And yes, it does. You have to be in the bushes finding the microphone, and you have to be there as well when you're accepting all the glory. It's both.
My God.
And not everyone witnesses it.
So I have this new business that I put up with my wife as my co-founder and a couple more of my co-founders from Podcast Network. Side cash flow business lang. It's called Papa Pressure. Yeah, we're a pressure washing company. Because the Philippines is filthy as hell. Nobody's cleaning it, right?
I know.
So I can relate. The other day, we were supposed to do a job somewhere. And the guy that we hired who was supposed to assist my team lead. Show up had LBM though. Like, oh my God, I will be the pressure washer today.
Yes,
that's absolutely entrepreneurship right there. If you're not willing to roll up your sleeves, I don't care how long you've been in the game, you need to be willing to be the janitor, even at year 5, year 10.
Absolutely.
Right?
It's not about that big fancy office that you see in the movies, right? It's not about, you know, flying on these private jets. It's you have to be willing to do the dirty and you have to love your vision and believe in it every day and believe in the people around you. But I did want to ask though, working with your wife, how's that?
Ooh, this is our first baby together because we're both entrepreneurs, but we've always had stuff on the side, and we're both alphas. We're type A personalities. But we found the healthy middle, and we just need to really. So she is a marketing genius. She does all our inbound lead gen. Because it's a lead gen game, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a hustler, so I'm out, anything outbound and fundraising. And then at the end, it converges into the funnel. And mm-hmm. then at the end of the day, whoever closes it, what, as long as we have leads, we have jobs to do, we're happy. There you go. So that's good. And it also unlocked a different level of business or a different level of intimacy in our relationship. Because of course, like before you sleep, you do the normal husband and wife game. Now we're talking about cash flow. What's our cash flow? Who are we going to hire? Huh? There you go. Oh my God. That's what we thought. It's not sexy, okay? It's like, who are we going to hire? It's always a constant problem-solving exercise.
Yes, absolutely. But it's great when you're able to do it with somebody that you really trust, no? And somebody absolutely. That you respect and love. And so happy to hear that's working for you guys. Pasend naman yung number, magpapapressure. Wash din ako.
There you go. Just go to papapressure.com. Oh, there you go.
Yes, you heard that. Papapressure.com. Check it out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sometimes if you're lucky and my guy doesn't show up, I'll be the one pulling up the earth. Watch out, BGC. I will clean the whole filth out of those black-ass sidewalks that you guys see. That's what we're going to do. The ones that you see in TikTok, YouTube, and you know, those pressure washing.
Yeah, I love those videos. They're so satisfying. Even the ones with the carpet cleaning.
Yes, that's my business. There you go. We're the first one here. Okay, now, all right. Before we wrap this baby up, I know we all have very limited time. Kat, what's up next for you guys in NEMA? I know this is literally the start. I'd love to have you back on the show again. But what's the immediate future like? And if there's anything that you want the people to know and follow for your talents or brand signing up, what was that like?
Yeah, so absolutely. So NEMA, currently right now, we're growing our talent management roster, but we're also growing our influencer management arm. And that business is really starting to take off. So that's where businesses come to us with the proposition of needing, let's say, 30, 40, 50 influencers, but not understanding, you know, how to work with influencers, or they need help with the creative idea behind it. They want metrics overall. And so we've been really growing that and spending a lot of time this year. And that's really what I want to kind of push forward in terms of working with influencers. It's super important for businesses to find the right partner to be able to get an agency that keeps their KPIs in mind and isn't just pushing their agenda forward. And that's what we do first at NEMA. It's analytics first, right? Today, we have 220 signed with us, and these are all individually managed. So super proud of that, of our small team that's growing this business. So we'd really like to look, you know, for more clients in this area and grow the space, because I believe that there's also responsible influencing that we really espouse at NEMA, being able to make sure that the right message is going out to the right audience and not just saying something for a dollar, right? Or saying something for a peso.
Got it.
So really growing that. The NEMA roster is expanding. Can't say just yet, but we are going to be announcing two new talents that are joining the family. We just finished their photo
shoot. Or buduleros at night, my goodness.
Ay, meron isa dyan na sobra. So what they're going to be joining the family, we'll be announcing them later this in March, along with their press conference so that the press can meet them as well. So super excited about that. And also, we're hiring at NEMA, so come check us out. You can follow us at NEMA Management on Instagram, TikTok, across all socials. And check out our videos as well. If you're interested, watch our BBIB video. We just hit 4 million today.
Wow, that is amazing. Thank you so much again, Kat. But before I let you go, if they want to work with you and, again, reach out to you and then do hustle with you, where do they go and how do they do that?
So you can send an app. You can visit www.nema.ph, which is our website. There is a link on jobs. You can see what's available and you shoot your resume, send it over. We're looking for talent managers and producers. So we would love to have you join our team. Kailangan game ka.
Hustler. There you go.
Hustler ka. Welcome. Mm-mm. So send your stuff over. We'd love to connect with you.
That is amazing. But Kat, before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if we did say some jargon, it's going to be the show notes on HustleShare.com. If you also want to be part of our supporters to support our HustleShare podcast so that we can keep doing this for over 5 years that I've been doing it. And we'll be doing it until I can stop talking. Hopefully somebody can inherit to carry it on. Please do support us at premium.hustleshare.com. Again, Kat, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
All right, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.